It's the Seattle Kitchen Show right here from the Hot Stove Society. Thank you so much for joining us. I'm Chef Tom Douglas.
And I'm Terry Rotiro, the chef in the hat.
And I'm Katie O.
I own many of Seattle's fine restaurants here in downtown Seattle, including the one we're standing above, Lola. And I just ate at the Carlisle Room for brunch this weekend when I went to see Waitress, show at the Paramount.
So I heard it was a very fun show.
It was a fun show. It started a little slow, and then it just kicked butt all the way to the end.
So. Did you eat all the pies at the Carlisle Room?
You know, the pies were something. We did sell a bunch of pies in the little mason jars.
Mm-hmm.
People were a little shocked by the price. I know it seemed expensive for $10 for a four-ounce pie, but you had to remember that, how much of that is sales tax and how much of that goes to the theater to support all the great things that SDG does for our arts community, considering how much less is going to the schools right now. They're kind of stepping in some of that help. So it is what it is. It's had to be. It wasn't a big moneymaker for us.
Theater prices.
But it was super fun. People had a ball with them. And so it was... The run was good. It finally sold out at the end, and the pies sold out, and it was just a good time. Congrats to STG, the Seattle Theater Group, for putting on a great show. We're doing a trip to Whidbey Island today, huh, Sarah? You went over there, and okay, Sarah's our assistant producer, and she had a little fun over on Whidbey. We're going to find out about that. Chef Brittany Bartleben is here. She is the chef of the Dahlia Bakery. Is going to join us for the Baker's Corner. We are going to share our favorite taste of the week.
Boy, do I have some.
I bet you do.
After 10 days in France, yeah, I do.
Do they have decent food over there?
They have, overall, they had some very decent food, yeah.
Good. What about in your town? I mean, your mom's cooking is awesome, right?
I didn't go eat in my town. At home. Tomato salad from the vine right in the back of the house,
yeah.
And so on and so forth.
Yeah, there's nothing you can do to that perfect tomato that's going to make it any better.
No. And celery root from the garden, too. That was very cool.
Awesome. Of course, we're going to go toe-to-toe on food trivia, which, you know, I kind of feel like I need to win this week.
Do you feel like you need to win?
I do, because I've been putting in a poor showing lately.
I've been putting in a poor showing lately.
Well, you have.
Touche.
Don't give him that. Tom, is this going to cost you money, though?
Yeah, exactly. It usually does cost me a little gift certificate to the gift shop that's right here next to our stage. Anyway, let's go right to ordinary to extraordinary so we can pop this thing off successfully.
Yes. This is where you take some ordinary dishes and you make them extraordinary, as you do. And we like to use the national food holidays as a jump-off point. The next one up on the 23rd is National Pot Pie Day. I love a pot pie.
Do you?
I do.
What do you love about a pot pie?
I
mean, what would be a perfect pot pie to you?
A flavorful gravy, a flaky pie crust with a nice bit of salt in it.
Uh-huh.
And I like mine pretty heavy in vegetables. So like, you know, browned mushrooms. I like the classic peas and carrots. Mm-hmm. I like a little potato. I like some herbs in there. But that's pretty basic. So how would you make it extraordinary?
I don't agree. I think that's not basic anymore.
Oh, that's not basic?
Not the way you just made
okay.
it.
Okay.
I mean, you make it exactly like that, fresh. You know, use those vegetable fresh or fresh frozen, you know, whatever you find.
Mm-hmm.
I think you make a wonderful ingredient. I think that's where the chicken pot pie can go from beautiful to disastrous by just being
a little too cut in the corners,
lazy. You know, canned vegetables and bad sauce and bad crust, I mean, you definitely have a crummy mm-hmm. chicken pot pie or pot pie on your hand. Mm-hmm. But if you use good ingredients, you know, I personally think it's good with seafood. If you do a good seafood,
now that's interesting.
Like mussels,
tell me more.
Clam, and cod, you know, pieces of cod, and you do that in a very white sauce, a good white mm-hmm. wine sauce.
Here's what I would say to that, though. If you're going to go that direction, I would make your seafood gravy, like, you know, do the whole thing. But I would cook your pie shell separately.
And place it on
and
top.
And place it on top. Because to me, if you're going to put the seafood in a pot pie, it's going to overcook by the time
right.
you get it hot all the way through.
Right.
Yeah.
So you could do a...
just like a crispy pie topping.
Deconstructed mm-hmm. pot pie.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that... But I think it's a good way to make, you know, finish with fresh herbs. Right now, the basil, the tarragon, all those herbs needs to be used. Otherwise, mm-hmm. they're going to go bad on us.
Mm-hmm.
So you use all those fresh herbs with some nice seafood, and I think it's delicious.
Tarragon and seafood with a nice little buttery topping? That sounds great.
Sounds great.
Yeah. Yes.
The other thing I would think about it when you're making it at home is that sometimes people cut the vegetables too small. And I think that's it's not really something you think about too much, but because all the recipes kind of call for that. But if you're making like a casserole of pot pie, which oftentimes, and pot pie is an adventure. It takes a lot of work.
Oh yeah,
you've got to be serious. About
I know.
It.
You
got
to
be.
It's like trying to make our coconut cream pie at home. It takes. You got to commit the
you
day.
You got to want it.
Yeah.
You got to want it.
But anyway, so if you cut your vegetables in larger chunks, use a little bit larger pan. What I can't stand is when pot pie is. You can't tell what you're eating.
Like
it's just
it
a big
out.
Pile of goo, and it's overcooked, and it mushes out. Mm-hmm.
That's the one I was referring to when I said you just made it great by having fresh vegetable diced and everything.
Something use big more, chunks.
Yeah.
Right?
A little then, toothsome.
Yeah, yes, exactly.
I like that. Okay.
Bite.
We have time, I feel like, for one more national holiday, and that's for lobster.
Oh. Endless.
On the 25th.
Why don't you make us a nice little roll?
Well, a lobster roll seems to be super popular no matter what part of the country you're in, so I'm going to skip that because that seems like it's being overdone right now.
I like a nice butter poach lobster tail. You take a lobster tail from a Maine lobster, you blanch it. Blanch it for about 4 minutes in boiling water. Take it out, and then separate the tail from the claws. Or you can even use the claws too if you want to. But then, when you warm, you slice it thin, and you put it in a pan with a butter, beurre monté kind of sauce on top of that. Fresh herbs again. Then you put in there like summer savory and stuff like that, basil, and finish it like this, and just put it on top of mashed potato with a glass of champagne.
Well,
I'm just saying. If you can have lobster,
that is really. I mean, that is definitely the difference between Chef and the Chapeau and myself.
Right? Yeah, we went French all the way.
When I think lobster, I think champagne.
Yeah, when I think lobster, I think pot stickers.
Yeah, no.
I shuck the whole raw lobster. I puree the meat with little bits of roasted shiitake mushrooms, a little chili paste, some lemongrass, some ginger, shredded carrots, and
that sounds good too.
And I make a little. Almost like a sausage stuffing, because lobster, when you cook it like that, will firm up like a sausage does. I put it in a little gyoza or pot sticker wrap, and then I just pan fry them with a little...
What's the sauce?
Well, you can do any sort of sauce, any sort of condiment, black bean sauce, any sort of condiment with it. But what I love doing is I take a little water that has cornstarch in it, and when I'm pan frying my pot stickers, I spread that over, and that browns into a little sheet on the bottom of the pan.
Oh, yeah. A little lacy,
and you kind of turn them out.
Crisp.
Add that crisp on the top.
Yeah. Sounds
holy
good.
Smokies.
I will take one order of both of your lobster dishes.
But it is
a distinct difference
in how we think, though,
yes.
right?
Yes.
Yeah,
it's
kind of interesting.
You go east, and I go west.
I'm west, you're east. Hate to bring it to you.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, yeah, the other way around.
Coming up, an award-winning Taco Bell. Really? The best non-restaurant meals? We must be talking Food in the News on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. Welcome back to the Seattle Kitchen Show on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. It's time for Food in the News. We have our own Food in the News, if you don't mind, today.
I don't mind.
You don't mind? You sure?
I want to hear all about it.
We have two things going on. We have the Icelandic takeover at Cuoco. You know, every year we do a week with an Icelandic chef in one of our restaurants.
That's fun.
Sponsored by Iceland and the whole consortium over there that promotes Iceland. So this year they're taking over Cuoco, which is interesting to go from Italian to Icelandic.
I was going to say, is it a mashup of cuisines or is it just purely Icelandic food?
Purely Icelandic food. From October 11th to the 14th, Chef Hakan Mar Oversson from Essentia Restaurant in Reykjavik will partner with Chef Ron Anderson at Cuoco. And so far, over the last 5 or 7 years that we've done this, it is super cool. Often sells out. I didn't realize how many people were interested in that food because, you know, with Icelandic flights leaving Seattle every day now, stopping in Reykjavik, many people are stopping over, which I have never done.
Which I think you ought to. You're always flying over that country.
Everyone who goes says it's just a party town.
Is it?
I'm not much of a partier, though. You know, I like to sit in my chair and sip on a whiskey, but I'm not like a bar-to-bar party guy.
That seems like a very cool thing to do at a party.
Maybe we should
sit back, watch the party, drink
Tom,
your whiskey.
Tom, maybe we should go together. So maybe
we could have something to do with our age group. I know I host the golf tournament north of Glasgow every year, and maybe six of the guys stopped over as a group in Iceland and Reykjavik, and they were a wreck for the next week.
This is when you start betting money.
Yeah, exactly.
Also coming up, this is super fun. Every quarter, we do a Food Lovers Weekend here at the Hot Stove. If you don't know, this is where we tape our show, the Hot Stove. If you want to come be with this fabulous audience that we have today, it's only $15 at thehotstovesociety.com. But this weekend is a little bit different. We do these intensives. So it's 2.5 days. You start on a Friday night with dinner and lessons and blah, blah, blah.
And cocktails.
And cocktails and wine. And then it's all day Saturday. We begin with breakfast of the area, and then all day Saturday and all day Sunday. And so this one is Far East Foods from Asia, Authentic and Not.
And not.
Because, you know, us American chefs, we like to play around. We're not bound like maybe French chefs used to be. Like Chinese chefs might be.
Right.
We're not bound by our cuisine. We like to play around. And I know it's offensive to some people from those areas. And I'm sorry about that. You know, the cultural appropriation thing. But it's fun for us. And that's we've always enjoyed to
right.
do that.
Well, so. Yeah. I think food is a special area, though, when you pay reverence in just the right way, when you really care about the product that you're making mm-hmm. and you want it delicious. I think it's a good thing to
right.
cross cultures.
Cross cultures.
Yeah.
Anyway. I love doing it, and so that is we're excited to have this. We have Katie. Can you tell me the names of all the different?
Oh my gosh! Well, there's you. Yeah. There's your partner in crime, Eric Tanaka, Rachel Yang from Revel, delicious restaurants.
Love that.
Yes, Matsuko Soma from Kamonegi, that restaurant in is it the Wallingford area?
Yeah, it's right on that, right across from. What's that little Italian restaurant that used to be on Queen Anne that's now out in Wallingford?
Ooh, I don't know off the top of my head, but it's a really delicious...
It's a little
delicious,
bit hard to find, is what
it's
I'm
a little,
saying.
Yeah, it's a kind of an interesting little triangle mm-hmm. Block, but they make the most delicious homemade buckwheat soba noodles
Correct.
And tempura there. Melissa Miranda from Musang. Herschel Taghap, old crew member of yours. Mm-hmm. He's going to do something called Hella Rice.
Well, you know, Herschel is Filipino, and he loves teaching that culture. He does a class here at the Hot Stove called The Thrilla in Manila.
Mm-hmm.
And The Thrilla from Manila, I think.
Either way, yeah. Super cool. I love that he's bringing his culture to the masses. And then a whole host of other chefs that you've got from your team cooking up some delicious, delicious food.
So if you are interested in a intensive Far East experience, go to hotstovesociety.com. It's October 19th to the 21st.
And it's always a lot of fun. Everybody who's ever done those classes, whenever you talk to them, they're like, oh, my God, it's such a blast.
It's intense. I mean, we call it an intensive for a reason.
Right.
It's 2.5 days of
cooking.
Keep your head in the game.
That's right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What else is in the news?
All right. We've got food in the news. And last segment, you teased, Taco Bell was voted the best Mexican restaurant in the country.
Boom.
And the internet is up in arms.
They should
Tom,
be.
You know, the internet is a funny thing, this up-in-arms yeah. thing, right?
Ooh, yeah,
for a whole 24 hours, they're up-in-arms,
I know,
and then they're on to the next subject.
Is it not the same people from the internet that also voted on this?
Yes, exactly.
I'm a little confused.
It's the same people who voted.
Where the distinction of internet people stops. Mm-hmm. But the Harris poll polled more than 77,000 Americans that have deemed the California-based Chinese-owned, which I actually didn't know before reading this article, Taco Bell, the best Mexican restaurant in the country.
I get beat up for making dumplings and the Chinese owned Taco Bell.
They're doing it well. I mean, they're really pleasing the crowds. They beat out
fine.
Qdoba, Baja Fresh, Del mm-hmm. Taco, kind of all those big mm-hmm. Mexican restaurant chains. I think it's that fourth meal that they keep on advertising.
I'm curious to know how many other restaurants were entered in that competition of best Mexican restaurants.
I think all of them.
I think all of them. But, you know, when you think about it, it's ubiquitous. It's everywhere. I mean,
right.
So even if you don't have a particular Mexican restaurant in your town, you might vote on the Taco Bell, and there might be.
And here we are talking about it.
And here we are talking about it. We can't. Have you ever eaten at a Taco Bell?
Here's what I'll say about Taco Bell. I haven't eaten a Taco Bell. I can't even imagine. Maybe 25 years. I have
no idea. Oh, Tom, I need to take you out to Taco Bell if you've never been to Taco Bell.
Yes. You know. But here's what I'll say about it. I bet that the list coincides with the people who spend the most money on marketing.
Yep.
You know, I maybe wouldn't disagree with that. Taco Bell does a really good job marketing their product, which has pretty much the same five or six ingredients, and they just come up with new ways to reconfigure it.
Yeah.
And people just love it. So there you go. Congratulations, Taco Bell, on a big win.
That happens in real restaurants, too. Like, if you go to a Chinese restaurant and you look at the menu and it's got like 4,000 items on it, right? But it is the same ingredients, it's just kind of done in different ways.
That's
in many ways.
And that's right.
The Sauté Houses of Seattle, when I first moved here in 1977, very much the same way, right? You go in and you get this chicken that's sautéed with carrots and celery and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And then, or it's beef, or it's pork, or it's scallops.
Right.
And each one of those is a separate line in the menu, but it's just a different protein in the same sauté pan.
Right, right.
Ugh.
So it just makes it look huge.
Yeah,
right?
That's right. That's right.
The menu that I worked at Boondocks on Broadway had 70 pages.
No way.
What? 70 pages.
70?
70.
Oh, my. Yeah. How do you prep?
What was
you don't have
pages?
To. It's not a big deal, right? Because it's all the same ingredients, mashed up in a different
eggs and things, pretty much, right? Well, that's essentially what Boondocks.
Eggs if you want hash browns, bacon, or, you know, Eggs Your Way could take a full page.
Yeah.
Just with the different,
Boondocks. God bless.
R.I.P.
All right. We don't, I don't believe, have any.
Go ahead. Let's do it.
Oh, quick and easy garnishes to glam up your boring food. You want to talk about it? We've got 1 minute.
Speaking of Boondocks, our big garnish of Boondocks was a lemon wedge dipped in paprika, you know, with the leading edge. Woo, that was beautiful.
You know what I like about that? Like, someone's going to take that lemon and eat the lemon and go, this is delicious.
I think you ought to bring that back.
Yeah, exactly.
Bring that to the Dali Lounge.
Well, flowers. Flowers are a great, easy garnish. They're edible. They're beautiful on a salad. I know they seem a little cliche sometimes, but
greens are very good garnishes in general. Like, if you could even take lettuce,
a little
and
piece of parsley on top of everything.
No, not greens as in parsley, but like arugula, like you just said, like salad lettuces that are in general greens or used in salads. You can use that as a garnish on plates, and it's very edible.
Sprouts are a big one now. You can't get anything without a sprout of some sort on top. It seems like to me.
Or microgreens.
Microgreens.
That's what I meant, sprouts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Then let's
Coming up, production assistant Sarah is taking a trip to Whidbey Island, and we're going along for the ride on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM.
You're listening to Seattle Kitchen. My name's Sarah Leibovitz, and I have a confession to make. I'm not actually a city girl. I'm from a town of maybe 1,000 people located in rural upstate New York. A place with no public transportation, no restaurants, no grocery store. We didn't even have like a little corner store until around 2 years ago. What I'm trying to get at here is that I'm not a stranger to rural living. So when I was invited to Whidbey Island to come see Whidbey Grown Week, in advance of the actual date it opens, which is this week, I figured I knew what I was in for. I survived 18 years of it, after all. And I think the main thing that sticks out to me, aside from being pretty and covered in trees, is that there's a certain attitude I expect from a small rural town. Maybe it's because I'm from the East Coast, but where I grew up, pretty much everyone was at least a little bit of a hermit. Maybe not like an actual one, though there were some of those too. But in attitude, for sure. People could be kind, and if they liked you, they were some of the best friends you could ever make. But don't expect anyone to, like, make small talk in the grocery store or ask you how your day is going. Which made the people I met on Whidbey a little confusing. Even when I was first leaving the ferry terminal, there was this weird mixture of familiarity and foreignness. Familiarity with the small town of Clinton, with its few houses and even fewer stores. But surprise at the small shuttle that stood parked in front of them. It was a bus that traveled all over the island, complete with a driver who was kind and patient, and answered all my questions about how to get where, how long it would take, and anything else I could think of. And the ride was free. I watched as lush forests and open fields flew by, opening up into small towns and cute storefronts. Locals waved down the bus from the side of the road, and it pulled over to accommodate them. Like that was normal. I was very sure it was not. I figured it must be some kind of fluke. One kind person does not a town make. So I said goodbye and waved off the bus as I reached my first location, the local farmer's market. I love a good farmer's market, with booths filled with fresh vegetables and handmade jewelry or soaps, and, of course, all the delicious snacks there are to try. This one had all of that, nestled near an old barn turned storefront. It also had entertainment. Morris dancers covered in bells jangled as they moved, knocking large sticks together and singing to the music. And people were actually watching, not just walking by pretending they didn't see it. They were calling out compliments and even cheering when the dances got complicated. Some even danced along, pulled from the crowd to join in. My first interviewee was also watching, along with manning a booth. His name's Stephen Williams, owner of Foxtail Farm. The farm's been in production for about 3 years, after he moved from North Carolina to attend the organic farming school located on the island. And he brought some of his southern roots along with him.
I tend to lean more towards stuff that I grew up eating, southern favorites that are difficult to grow, especially in western Washington, but I do okra, sweet potatoes, a lot of collards, black-eyed peas, a lot of peppers.
I figured that must be pretty helpful considering the kind of competition there must be with 600 small farms on one island. He wasn't so concerned about competition, though.
People have been super supportive, and once we got to know everybody, yeah, I can't say enough about how gracious everybody has been in showing us support and making sure that we're able to make a living doing it, especially on the south end that do farming like I'm doing. I'm friends with all of them, and we hang out all the time, and I'm sure there's a little bit of friendly competition, but we all sort of have the same ideals as far as our growing methods and what our ultimate goal is. It's nice because there's a support system there.
In fact, Stephen told me he bought his farm with some friends he made at the organic farm school. They put an offer on the land together and split up the acreage evenly afterwards. They work side by side, growing crops next door to one another, talking to each other about their harvest and what's going on in their farm, and just kind of helping each other out. And that's something I heard everywhere I went on Whidbey, about how kind and supportive people are, and how you come to rely on and help each other.
We have collaborations with the distillery who comes and gets our grapes once we've pressed them, and they make a grappa from it. We have people who feed their animals from anything we're pressing. They'll want to come and get it for their animals, like the sheep and the cows and all of that. We also make some cider under a different name, Driftwood Hard Cider. And so, obviously, when we're making the apples, I think we have a line of cows all wanting those. Pigs, anyway. But it's kind of a fun, that after we press them. They don't get them before we press them. We get the juice, then they get the rest. Yeah, but everybody collaborates a lot on the island, which is really fun.
We use Three Sisters beef and pork. We use Deep Harvest Farm for some of our things. Cedar Hill Farm here as well. Let's see, Willowwood Farm at Eby's Landing, which a lot of people know Georgie, especially down in Seattle. We go to the farmers markets. We know a lot of farmers here, so it's nice to just pull in everything we can. There's some very quality people here, craftsmen, artists, musicians. It is a really cool thing to be able to witness all this stuff and to talk to these people. As you know, they're just people. You know, we all have kids. Our kids want to play together. I need you to build me a table. You need me to, you know, make you some dinner for somebody, and that's how we do it. You know, people barter here. They trade here. You know, somebody will show up and be like, hey, can I have lunch? I'll take your recycling to the dump for you. It's just, you know, it just works out that way. And it's pleasant way to live.
That's Karen Krug, one of the owners of the Spoiled Dog Winery, and Trap Landry, owner of Antha's Ferments, a restaurant in Langley. They both were quick to point out how they collaborate with their neighbors. Spoiled Dog Winery is known for making award-winning wine, and Antha's Ferments for making some of the best food on the island. But each of them contributed at least part of their success to the island itself. to the soil from which the food and grapes they use grow, and to the people who live there.
I think it's part of the nature of Whidbey. It is a small community, and you have to work together, you know, and there's no one thinking that they're better than somebody else. Like, we all need each other, you know, and that's, I think, in general in the world, but especially here. You know, you need a table made, you know, a couple of woodworkers, and you call them all and see who has time. It's as simple as that. We get approached to make ferments for different restaurants, for different events. We do gift certificate donations for raffles. We're tied in really well with Wicca, which is the cultural arts center here. We have Django Fest coming up next week, and we'll be hosting an after-hours jam with the Django Knots that'll be here for the whole week. Yeah, it's a lot of fun because you do need everybody in your community.
Something every person I talk to seem really proud of is where the things they make end up. Or maybe I should say where they don't end up. They're not shipped away to the city. They don't travel across the country. You won't find them in your grocery store. They're made for the island they come from. For people who can't get to Whidbey Island, are there other ways or places where they can purchase your wine?
No. Other than they can call us and we can send it to them. We will mail. We don't even carry it in the grocery stores here. So you'll find it at restaurants on the island. But we like people to come and see what we do.
And I think that's what makes Whidbey and the upcoming Whidbey Grown Week so special. The foods you'll find, the people you'll meet, the different ways they're working together to create experiences and foods, they're for the island. They're made from its people, working together in small towns on rural roads, in beautiful wineries surrounded by trees, and little restaurants with a staff of two. I think Joanne Lechner, co-owner of the bed and breakfast I stayed in, the Eagle's Nest, said it best.
We always enjoyed coming up through Whidbey on our travels up to see my parents, and it always called us back. So islands are friendly, I think, by nature. You know, we're a melting pot. You know, islands have a draw of people, and they're very accepting.
Leaving Whidbey felt a little like leaving home again. But thankfully one much easier to get to, considering it's only a 40-minute drive away. And it felt good to know that next time I or anyone else heads to the islands, all those things will still be there. The bus waiting to take you around the island, the food and vegetables and wine that grow from its ground and are made for its people. They'll all be waiting for whoever visits next. For a list of the people I met and the places I went while on Whidbey, check out our Facebook page, facebook.com/Seattle Kitchen. I'll put up a full report there, with pictures and everything. You're listening to Seattle Kitchen on Cairo Radio, 97.3 FM.
It's the Seattle Kitchen Show. Welcome back. I'm Tom Douglas.
I'm Terry Rocher, roller chef in the hat.
And I'm Katie O.
We are sitting here with Sarah Leibovitz, our production assistant, who just went to Whidbey Island and is now back. And it's going to tell me about people's strong opinions about me bashing Terry putting an egg on everything last week on the show.
Yes, I'm bashing.
And just so we clarify that, not everything.
Oh, my God, you put it on everything.
It was a hamburger.
You said everything was better with an egg.
Yes.
Okay.
That's not everything, though. We don't put it on everything.
The truth is not the truth.
Okay.
Tom is exasperated right now.
Okay, sir, what do people have to say?
All right, yeah, so I've been prowling our Facebook page, facebook.com/Seattle Kitchen. Come join us to talk about putting an egg on a burger, whether or not you like it. And it is pretty evenly split, but man, we had like 60 people who had very strong opinions on whether or not
it's pretty evenly split, unlike the conversation about the banana split.
Yeah, that one, less people happy with you on that one.
I lost that one, yeah. And I believe I lost the cottage cheese question pretty roundly.
You're losing a lot here, Tom.
I'm losing a lot.
You got to bring it back.
The internet is a place full of strong opinions. If you're making an opinion, I don't think that you're middling. So what were some of the comments, Sarah?
Yeah, Christine Shaw Okutsu said, a fried egg on a burger is absolutely amazing. It adds a depth of flavor and really helps show off the other burger toppings. So she is very pro-Terry. Whereas Catherine Bedford Bonney just says yuck. So a little less of a
concise and to the point.
Gets it across.
That's a good opinion there.
And then, of course, Wendy Miller Case says, not sure. You could cook me one each way, and then I'll give you an opinion.
Oh, that's a smart woman
like
right
that.
There. Yeah,
yeah, I like
take advantage
to
of
have a little
I'd invite her for a burger and an egg on it so she can make up her opinion my
there
way.
There you go.
All right, let's make that happen.
Let's
Kathleen's
make that happen.
Getting a burger.
All right, yeah, I will be getting in touch with you to claim that burger.
All
yeah.
right. So I came back a little bit. It was 50-50. That's the first time I've even come close to getting some sort of support on my opinions.
Well, you know, you are very spicy some days, and you have strong opinions, and that's why we like hanging out with you.
You know what's funny about this whole thing is I don't eat eggs for breakfast very often.
Really?
I don't actually eat breakfast very often either, but... And it's funny because to me, adding an egg on, for example, you know, the famous Lyonnaise salad, to me, I think it's such a lovely thing in that frise with a little red wine vinegar and oil.
And bacon, right?
And
eggs
bacon
and bacon go together beautifully.
And croutons.
Yeah.
And then that egg just oozes out and just runs into your salad. And I think to me, that's such a beautiful thing.
It is. I love that salad. I love the egg on that salad. But what I was saying was... eggs don't belong on everything. And on a burger with a bun and with ketchup and mustard and a bacon or cheese or all that kind of stuff, egg is just
so good.
It's
you
like,
know,
who
eggs
cares?
Eggs on a burger instead of a lot of mayonnaise, I think, is a better thing to me.
And that's where we just disagree, because a perfectly fried over medium with a buttery, crispy edge on the egg, a little piece of toast... Then you're tasting the egg. Now you're tasting something.
And you're putting
that chicken worked hard to pop out.
Yes, that's true. You know, I was raised on an occasional fried egg sandwich.
Yes.
And I feel like that is a real delicious treat.
Because it's all about the egg.
It's all about the egg.
And
it's all about the runny yolk and the bread.
Yeah, that Lyonnaise salad is all about the egg.
Tom, it's not any different than having eggs with bacon and sausage.
It's very different.
No,
because on those scenarios, you kind of have the egg separate.
You just want it separate.
It's getting hot in here again, Sarah.
Extreme opinions coming right back.
I know. Well, the reason why we're bringing this up is because BuzzFeed came out with an article called 12 Egg Cooking Tricks You Can Steal from Pro Chefs. You two are pro chefs.
I thought we banned BuzzFeed from the show for their goofy things.
They are so goofy. They are a little goofy. But you know what? People go to BuzzFeed. This is a place. This is a resource for people.
My big tip on cooking an egg, especially like an over easy or a thing, I like some texture. So often you get eggs cooked in a restaurant where they're kind of cooked low and slow a little bit, and then they just roll them over.
They're white and they look like
the cook is busy doing all other things, right? So they just have to let that egg go. I like to take the saute pan, get it a bit hot, put some bacon fat and butter mixture in there because I like the brownness of the butter. Then I pop my egg in when it's hot so that it all gets all kinds of...
Frizzled and fried.
And, and they call it a fried egg for a reason. They don't call it a low poached egg
in
a fry pan. So so then I like that. And then pretty quickly, you got to pop it over, which is an easy little trick. If you just buy a dozen eggs, you can figure out how to just do that little egg flip thing.
If not, you're eating omelette or scrambled eggs.
Yeah, exactly. It's not like you have to throw them away. And then you're done. Then you're ready to go on a piece of toasted. Yeah. That's the other thing I hate about breakfast. It's when my bread doesn't come out toasted.
It's all blonde.
Or when my hash browns come out hash blonde.
Oh.
I didn't ask for hash blondes.
That's right.
I asked for hash browns.
That's right. Take it back to the kitchen. And Tom wants it crispy.
Tom, hash blonde is when you're lucky. Most of it is ash white.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, another egg cooking technique kind of along the lines of what you're talking about, Tom. I've seen this in particularly Southeast Asian countries where they put it in quite a bit of oil, actually. They crack it. It starts bubbling and spurting. Mm-hmm. And then instead of flipping it over, they kind of bathe the egg in that hot oil to cook the top.
It's called basting.
Egg basting. There you go. I don't
flip my egg either. When I do a sunny side up just for myself, and that happens, that's one thing that I do from time to time.
You like sunny side up? Yeah.
I just do one side, and I cover it for about 10, 20 seconds.
Uh-huh.
And then I let it go.
So does it get opaque on top of the yolk or not?
No, not opaque. It just cooks slightly the yolk. I'm a big fan of runny eggs. Most people are disgusting by how I eat eggs because the white is still not entirely, totally cooked in the middle with the yolk still runny.
Yeah.
But I like my eggs to be in a butter base where the butter is more than past blonde. And then, like you said, the outside frizzles and, you know, just looks like that little crispy edges. I love that.
Yeah. It's interesting. Eggs are such a personal preference. Like, everyone's got just the right way that doesn't exactly line up with someone else's. So it's,
And also, an omelette, something not to forget to mention, is a great thing if it's done properly. Mm-hmm. Not cardboard omelette, but just nice. And stop your omelette from cooking before it's totally done. So you can add your ingredients if you're going to put, like, salted mushroom or whatever in there. Put them in there. Put your cheese. Fold the omelette and let it sit for a minute so then it can finish to cook gently and it's still soft in the middle.
And this is a
anybody
similar,
hungry yet?
Similar technique for scrambled eggs, right, Terry? You can do this so you don't have rubbery scrambled eggs.
Right.
Another thought.
Well, Chef, that egg, that omelette, I would like to have right now.
Yes, me too. So
could you get on that, please? During the break, maybe you could get that together.
And we've got about 20 people behind us that would
that
like
too.
One too. So if you could just
I need
put
a
on...
paella pan now to make an omelette.
There you go.
All right. What kind of cheese would you put with that? Do you like chèvre? I love a chèvre
I'm
omelette.
A big chèvre. Fresh chèvre is delicious. Depends on what flavor you're looking for. Emmental, which is like a Swiss cheese, but a bit more bitey a little bit. That's also a good cheese to use. Comté is a great cheese to use. Melts really well.
A good melting cheese, though.
Yeah, a good melting cheese. You don't want a cheese that stays whole. So those kind of cheese. And fresh herb in your omelette is also a very good thing to do, whether it's parsley, fresh chop, or chives, you know, gives a little bite to the seasoning.
Would you ever use cheddar? I'm like looking at you thinking, would Thierry ever have a Denver omelet? Is that something
you
would order?
You just ruined his day.
Yeah, I know. He looks
Why would you want to go from a nice little farm goat cheese, fresh curd to... No.
All right. Taste
Not
of the week.
Not if I don't have to.
Taste of the week coming right up on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. We are back in the kitchen on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. It's the Seattle Kitchen from the Hot Stove Society, and it's our Taste of the Week time, where we celebrate a week-long adventure in eating and kind of try and pick out what we had, where we had it, how you could possibly achieve the results yourself if you made it, and all that sort of thing. So, Chef, you want to start us off?
I'm going to start because I just came back from France from 10 days, and I was spent 5 days in Bordeaux. Which, if you haven't been to Bordeaux like me in 15 years, you won't believe the changes that has happened to that city. It's actually a very beautiful city. They've cleaned it up. They've put tram in the middle of the city. I think Seattle Council should go and visit that and see some ideas of tram. No, it's really well done. I'm not saying anything bad. I'm just saying it's a great place to go and see what they achieve.
Do you suppose they have 12 million euro bike lanes?
They don't have bike lanes.
Okay.
In France, if you're a biker, you're on your own.
Good luck.
Good luck. Go to the woods. Sorry. No, there are people with bikes, but not as many as people using the tram. And those trams are full all the time, and people use them. And they're like, I think they're like 25 cents or whatever. They're cheap. Mm-hmm. They're not very expensive.
Thierry Roter, what is your taste of the week?
Yes. The tram. No, just kidding. So anyway, been in Bordeaux, visited some restaurant, and one of them, we were a dozen of us together, and one of them, we had a traditional lamprois dish. Lamprois is a big, big eel from the Bordeaux region, which is very traditional dish, marinated in red wine and done as a stew, served with potato, leeks, and onions, but in a stew form. And it was very interesting to revisit that because I haven't had that in probably 30 years plus. I'd forgotten how that was, and it was delicious. But it was
delicious.
That particular dish was done exactly how you're supposed to do it, which this can deviate from that to, like anything else, into a very somber area. But no, this was delicious.
So salt water or fresh water?
Fresh water.
Fresh water.
Fresh water eel at the end of the bay of Arcachon, which is in Bordeaux. And those eels are big. They're like they almost look like a murin, kind of that big, kind of lamprois. And they cut them in slices and marinate them in red wine, just like you would a boeuf bourguignon or something like that. Overnight, let it macerate and let it marinate, and then seared and then finish with a red wine sauce, kind of idea. And
maybe a little again, Bordeaux sauce.
Bordeaux sauce, yes. Bordeaux wine for sure. But anyway, that was a very interesting dish to revisit and to. If you're adventurous in eating, that's something you should go to La Tupina in Bordeaux, which is a classic restaurant there. And they'll, you know, that was the highlight of the meal in terms of classics, because that was not, you know, they serve foie gras for appetizer. Seriously, 1-inch thick, a big slice like this, two of them on the plate for an appetizer. I'm like, that's
very
too
generous,
much.
Very generous.
Too much.
And I know the French, they don't like to leave any food on their plate.
Right, yeah. So it's embarrassing. You know, yeah. It's like you leave.
Don't shame your country. You eat all that foie.
You know, in Japan, it's just the opposite, right? If you eat it all, they think they didn't serve enough. So you always leave something. And then in France, if you leave anything, they're like, oh, you hate it?
Yeah.
You didn't like it?
We'll make it again.
Yeah.
And then
another round of foie coming right up.
Another little dish I had, which I've never had before, but that was absolutely scrumptious. And I think that was a highlight of all of us once we sit down and we were a little tour and decided on what dish was the favorite of the week. It was a crudo of veal with a langoustine mousseline on top. And the mousseline was just flawless, beautiful flavor of that shellfish, you know, like shrimp kind of
sure.
idea. And then the bottom was a crudo of veal. That was sensational.
So crudo being raw sliced
raw diced, veal. Very small diced veal, marinated obviously into like a little oil and herbs and everything. It was sensational.
Katie, what was your taste of the week?
You know, my dear pal, Callie Meyer, introduced me. She was like, hot tip of the week, Katie-O. She texted me, and she's like, put everything bagel toppings on your scrambled eggs. And I was like, interesting. So we met for the farmer's market, and she brought me a little reusable, you know, bag, satchel to put my little produce in. And at the bottom, she was like, I brought you some of that topping that I made. And honestly, in the mornings, I do a little soft-boiled egg. I sprinkle that on top, a little bit of salt, and it is delicious. It is my taste of the week. So if you're looking to do something a little bit different with your eggs, you know, sometimes adding vegetables and things is a bit of a to-do to get that flavor, and sometimes can also make your eggs runny. We're kind of going back to the egg topic, but having kind of a little crispy sesame seed, poppy seed, little onion on there is delicious. That is my taste of the week.
There you go. That's what I do with my veggie rub, is I sprinkle it on my fried eggs.
It's the same delightful. Idea. Yeah. Really recommend. Highly recommend.
I'll come over for the breakfast.
Okay, you come on over,
since
Thierry.
We cook every week in your house.
Yeah, exactly.
My taste of the week is yesterday we were larding the pantry because we were making soup for dinner. And so we just took the opportunity to make chicken stock at the same time enough so that we can put refill the freezer with chicken stock containers. But we also, my wife had brought over all the paste tomatoes that she wanted to use for her sauce for the year. And, you know, blanched them, did the little X in them, skinned them, and then just put them into big pots on our stove. And I watched those for 6 hours cooking away yesterday with tons of garlic and fresh basil. And by the time it was done last night, and I was putting it in plastic containers for the freezer, wow, what a treat to have that kind of resource in the freezer for the rest of the winter.
Absolutely.
I have 15 pints of beautiful tomato sauce, and then I also just froze some whole tomatoes because these particular tomatoes kind of melt in a pan when you pull them out of the freezer whole, skin on, everything, just like out of the garden into the freezer, they just melt into a sauce.
I find what you did so satisfying when you can look in your freezer and see so much to work with, and you're like, oh, I don't really have to think about it because I've got tomato sauce there that I can just pull out that's going to taste just as fresh as when you made it.
Yeah, and the two different very different tomato sauces, right? The tomato that you just put whole frozen into your pan and let it melt down has a whole different freshness quality than the 6 hour cooked classic Italian tomato sauce. But I think the key is those paste tomatoes. They really change the texture. This was thick, lumpy, gorgeous
tomato
sauce.
Yeah, they're not the wet heirloom that takes forever to cook and then they don't have the flavor.
Yeah, and you can't buy this stuff. You can't buy it in a jar. It's just not the same.
You got to go visit your farmer's market. I see them at some of the tomato
paste
stands.
Tomatoes?
Yeah, paste tomatoes. Not all of them have it, but you can occasionally find them, and they are perfect for that reason.
I love them.
And at the end, it's the time to use that basil plant you have on the garden or the basil, whatever you have, because it's going
to freeze. Make your pestos and freeze them.
It's also time to make minestrone out of all the vegetables that you put away last year, and let's get those out of there and start fresh. Okay, Katie, you're going to host a dinner party. Chef Terry and I are going to cook.
That's right.
And we're going to be happy about it on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. Back in the kitchen, it's time to host a dinner party. KDO, who are you going to have cook with us this week?
Well, we are going to invite Quincy Jones. That's
wow.
right. You want to know why?
Let
because
me guess. Quincy.
That's right.
Quincy.
Here, you're so smart.
What?
We're
going to
use Quince in every single course, and you two are cooking it up with our special guest, Quincy Jones.
Mm. He's so smooth.
He is the smoothest.
Yeah.
We're going to have a lot of soul in that dinner.
He produced that album for Michael Jackson, right? Off the Wall, wasn't
uh-huh.
it? Yeah,
mm-hmm.
that became the best-selling album of all time. I think just recently it was eclipsed, but...
I also hope he brings his daughter, Rashida. I really like Rashida Jones.
I don't know Rashida.
You
Tell
don't know Rashida
her.
Jones? We'll talk off air.
Well, he's not going to come by himself, so of course Rashida is coming.
Yeah, he's got to bring his daughter along. That would only be right,
I agree.
I would say. All right, who with this Quince dinner we were just discussing off air, is Quince ripe? Is it happening? Tom says yes.
Well, it depends on where you are, right?
Yeah.
It depends
right.
on where your tree is. Does it get direct sunlight?
Mm-hmm.
Is it more shady?
Mm-hmm.
You know, Terry, you said you're still 3 weeks away.
Yeah, mine are still 3 weeks away. And every year it's the same thing. Every year I want them to be ready earlier. And I try one. I'm like, holy cow, they're hotter than the rock.
And, yeah, and they tannic.
They do somehow ripen very fast towards the end.
Mm-hmm.
But to me, it's usually close to Thanksgiving is when I get my... Quince ready.
I'm really interested in this particular dinner party because the only thing I know of Quince is really just Quince paste,
mm-hmm,
that Spanish Quince
membrio.
Paste. Membrio that you have with your manchego cheese. So, who would like to take the cocktail appetizer portion? Yes,
yeah.
Okay.
Of course. Why not?
Sure. Why not? Go for it.
So, we're going to have a little, in honor of membrio, mm-hmm. we're going to have a little sherry to start with,
mm-hmm.
just a little Amontillado sherry. So, it's got... It's not super dry like a fino, but it's got a great kind of, I'm not sure how to explain that cask system, Solera system, where you just drip down through, you add different vintages of the wine itself and to make a blend of sherry.
Mm-hmm.
And this one has a little bit of sweetness to it, but it's also got the membrio on the side. Or even a little cube of it on a pick in your sherry would be kind of fun.
Because
that's sweet, and then you got the little drier sherry.
Yeah.
And then with a little cheese cracker made from the, now it just escaped the
Manchego.
Cheese.
Manchego.
Manchego kind of shortbread to go along with our dry sherry.
How delicious
nice.
Would that be? A little nutty shortbread mm-hmm. with that sherry. Mm, that
sounds great. And a little
great.
Bite of the sweet membrio.
Yeah, that sounds delicious.
So membrio, by the way, is just quinces
yeah.
that are cooked down almost, you start almost like in an applesauce scenario, and you just cook and cook and cook, and you really have to get out of the way of the spray that happens, right? Because as it thickens,
mm-hmm.
it gets really
it's pasty. It's recommended to cover it with a little, lift a little crack in
and
your...
And is it just its natural pectin that makes it into that gelatin-like texture?
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of got that patafouille texture when it's cooked down. All right, Thierry, we've had a nice cocktail. We've had a little shortbread.
I think I'm going to have a, talking about Manchego, I think I'm going to have a little Manchego... Quince, pickled quince and arugula salad for starter with a smoked duck breast that has been cured.
Smoky like
so
Quincy
like
Jones.
A ham idea where you slice the duck breast very thin, very, very thin. That's how you eat ham. The reason you slice them thin is so it's not chewy. So you slice your duck breast on the plate. You do your pickled julienne or just very thinly sliced quince. So you pickle them first, you know, you peel them, you pickle them in a 3-2-1 kind of brine where it's 3 water, 2 vinegar, 1 sugar,
mm-hmm.
and then spices with that, a little bit of spices, nutmeg, just light nutmeg, light cinnamon. And so you have those pickled sliced quince on top of your duck breast, and then make a nice little arugula salad with that, with sliced shaved Manchego on top. And I think that would be a nice little appetizer.
That does
drizzle
sound like
with a little
nice
bit of olive
appetizer.
Oil. I could have that.
Okay.
I could have that for breakfast right now.
I think Quincy Jones could have that for breakfast right about now. Tom.
Can you imagine if Quincy were to get some of this quince paste on his fingers and then go try and play the piano?
So sticky.
Oh, man. That's a sticky situation.
Yeah.
It's like, why is this key so sticky?
Okay, Tom, how are you going to make quince into an entree?
Well, let's stay in Spain,
yeah.
I think, because it feels Spanish to me
feels
for some reason. So, you know, there's a beautiful little roast out of the shoulder of the pig called a copa. It's where you get copacola from,
mm-hmm.
a capicola from when you are curing it. But I'm going to take that, And I'm going to lard it with some of that cured Spanish chorizo. So literally, I'll just take a knife into the roast, make a little hole, and then shove the chorizo into the roast at an angle so that when it's done cooking, when it's sliced,
it's melting
you just slice it thinly across it, and you see the little larding of the sausage inside
the smoky pieces of pork in the pork.
Glaze it with a little quince glaze made out of that same kind of membrillo paste. But the important part of this is that right before you serve the roast, you turn the broiler on, right? And you've got that glaze on it. And now we're going to caramelize that glaze to the top of the roast.
Nice.
And that quince paste for this one, we're going to take those Spanish sour oranges. Is it the Versailles orange?
Yeah, bitter orange.
The bitter orange. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That orange, along with the sweet quince, is going to make our little paste glaze sauce. And sounds luscious. And I would just eat that by itself.
You wouldn't even serve it with a little
roasted potato with that.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
You know, where you do that duck fried potato or something like that. But there's so much going on in that little pork roast that you don't want to mess it up too much.
That sounds delicious. I love a sweet, smoky style pork. It sounds delicious. All right.
So for dessert,
yep.
I think a quince tatin would be fantastic. Use it just like you would an apple tatin. And like an apple tart, tatin. So you caramelize your apple in the bottom of a cast iron pan. Then you put in the
your
dough.
Your quince.
And then you put and oranges too in there because I like the apple.
Like orange segments or orange peel?
Orange peel.
Wait a second. I just used that on the last course.
Oh, okay.
We've got flavor themes going.
How about some cranberries since they're coming in season?
Sure. Love
that. Just squeeze and just twist on another side. Can't stop me here. Dang it. And then put that together and caramelize it, put the dough on it and bake it. And then serve, of course, with a wonderful little apple cider ice cream. Because I would make sorbet, please. Not an ice cream, a sorbet. So apple cider sorbet with a caramelized quince tatin. Sounds like something I could have. And of course, don't forget a big batch of whipped cream. Because that's a must.
That is a must.
With that.
Why don't you just make ice cream if you're going to do the whipped cream and the sorbet?
No. It's different.
He's got a textural thing.
Yeah, you
got to
get the texture.
Right,
and it's different. When you get a big spoon of whipped cream on top of those melting apples or quince, it's different than having ice cream. Mm-hmm. It's different.
Do you think that this dinner has been so good that you'll be invited to Quincy Jones' party?
I think this
now?
Will be the most sold dinner in the world.
Okay.
I think he's going to produce my next album.
What are you going to call your album, Tom?
Cut.
My album happens to be a photo album. Because the old vocal cords just aren't quite up to snuff for this.
They're not.
What does Rashida do? I don't know Rashida.
Rashida's an actress.
Oh, she's an actress.
She's an actress, and she's an activist, and she's super, super funny.
Oh, yes. She'd be right with us at the table.
Oh, she'd be beyond all of us, I have a feeling. But that's why we bring her along. Got to up our game a little bit.
I'm going to have to go watch a YouTube of her telling a joke or two.
Yes, I think that's a wise idea.
All right. Up next, it's Baker's Corner with pastry chef Brittany Bartleben from the Dahlia Bakery on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. Welcome back to the Seattle Kitchen Show here at the Hot Stove Society. I'm thrilled to have somebody who's been trying to avoid us back on the show ever since we posted. Ever since I posted my disdain for the banana split, Brittany Bartleben has been avoiding our show.
Rightfully so.
For a good reason.
We're mad at each other.
They're fighting.
The good news is I'm right and she's wrong.
Says almost none of our listeners.
Brittany, pull that mic right up to you if you would. Brittany is the chef of the vaunted Dahlia Bakery, which is right here across the street from the Hot Stove Society. And that's where we get our breakfast sandwiches for breakfast every morning. Were they delicious?
Yes.
Good, yes. And Brittany has nothing to do with them, which is
probably why they're so good.
Gosh.
That's my shot for the banana.
Yeah, all right. I'll let you have that one.
Okay. Anyway, let's talk about foraged fruits and berries. And I know you're a big fan of city fruit, which is foraged in its own way.
It is in its own way.
And then what other things are you getting? Huckleberries?
So huckleberries are what's coming in right now, and they're hard to get. They're not cultivated, so you can't just go to the store and pick some up. But they are typically in farmers markets this time of year. And boy, they're just... They're treasures.
Delicious.
They're so good.
They're intense.
They're intense.
Yeah.
They're a little on the pricey side, but I really think they're worth it to invest in some and put immediately get them home, get them cleaned, and get them in your freezer. That's the first thing
yeah.
I would say.
I would say that there are also a lot of people that have probably never had the pleasure of a fresh wild huckleberry. I mean, so often you see them in preserves or as an ingredient, but... as you're saying, they're a little bit on the pricey side, and you have to go to a farmer's market or somehow find them
yourself.
Or
get out there and fight the bears for them.
That's right.
You know, Cafe Sport, which is a restaurant I was chef at for a few years, way back when, probably before you were born.
Oh, absolutely.
Because you're so young and youthful.
But we had an old codger, his classic old codger, came in, and he would always have kind of, at the time, beer came in those little... cardboard trays, you know, like the whole 4-6 packs would fit in.
Yep.
And it was lined with paper towels, and then he would have the huckleberries on top. And he would come in, I guess at that time he was 70 years old, and his hands would be stained purple.
Yep.
And every time I said, "How's it going out there?" His name was Warren Webster, the wild huckleberry man. And he says, "Oh, the bears were thick today." And I believed him every time.
Yep.
Because he just had that grizzled look about him, you know.
That's who I want picking my huckleberries, by the way, is that particular man.
Yeah. Well, now we get them from Foraged and Found, which is a foraging company. We mostly get our mushrooms from them, but this time of year we get all sorts of cool foraged berries from them. Black cap raspberries, trailing blackberries,
gooseberry,
skatoon berries.
Oh, yeah, skatoon
berry. Yeah.
What's a skatoon berry?
I've actually never tasted one.
It's kind of it's between a blackberry and a huckleberry, actually.
Oh, interesting.
In terms of flavor.
Yeah.
It's very woodsy.
Mm-hmm.
It's delicious.
Yeah.
You have to be adventurous, and it makes great jam. Mm. So you put a little sugar and some seasoning in there and put that into a nice little compote. It's delicious.
Yeah. The best thing to do, as I was saying, with these forage berries that you've paid dearly for is to get them home, get them clean, and get them in your freezer.
Right. Or jam it up.
I personally like to just sort of pull from them. When I have them, I absolutely treasure them. So I like to pull little handfuls of them from the freezer to last me throughout the year. Mm. Throw them in pancake batters. I've never made a huckleberry pie because it just, you need like 5 pounds of huckleberries.
And that would be the most expensive
pie. Exactly. but they make a wonderful jam or compote. And huckleberries themselves are, they become much more flavorful when you cook them. They're delicious raw, but I just absolutely think they come alive when you cook them. And so then you can take your compote or your jam and swirl them into vanilla ice cream base or drop a couple in the cup of a ramekin for creme brulee and make a huckleberry creme brulee.
Milkshakes.
It's the type of fruit you want to treasure. Use little bits at a time. And
it's pretty powerful in flavor.
It's very powerful. Little goes a long way.
It's sort of reminding me, the way you're describing huckleberries is much like how, Tom, you often describe truffles, in that you're putting this highly flavorful, very precious item in a fairly... benign base to really show off all that floral and fruity quality of the
absolutely
of the
that's the best way to describe them. They're the truffle of the fruit world.
But definitely makes a nice little compote for waffles or pancake and brunch.
So delicious and worth it. I mean, I think you're going to pay anywhere from $10 to $12 a pound for them. So it's spendy, but
it's
out of the realm of possibility.
Flavor,
concentrated, so lasts a long time.
For your buck.
Yeah.
The other reason you want to freeze them right away is that they're not like our hybrid fruits that are kind of grown for shipping and traveling in quart containers. They just mush out quickly.
Yeah. Right away.
You have to really get them. They won't last.
No,
The first thing you do before you do that is take the stem off, because a lot of those will have a little stem on it.
A little bit, yeah. And oftentimes there's just little bits of forest debris on them, which is, I think, kind of neat. But
Eat that stuff. Yeah. It's organic.
Yeah. right now at the Dahlia Bakery, we're doing a huckleberry bostock. So you guys know what bostock is?
I don't.
Yeah. Oh, so it's you take a slice of brioche, day-old brioche, smear it with an almond frangipane, and then you can just throw it in the oven from there, or you can put little pieces of fruit on them, and that's what we're doing.
You
we're
know
doing
what
figs
it's
and huckleberries.
From?
France? I don't know.
No, I'm asking because
I don't know the history of it.
But I think the Basque country, because I saw that in the Basque country the first time I saw it, was using it. So I'm wondering if it's coming down from the southern, like the Mediterranean coast or anything like that.
Yeah. Hmm. It's a great way to use day-old brioche.
Absolutely.
And I put almond frangipane on anything and I'll eat it.
Brittany, something that's a little bit more common that we can find around in the city and that I'm seeing a ton of are figs.
Yes.
Let's talk figs.
Yeah, yeah. Figs and huckleberries go beautifully together. Figs are another one that if you're just overwhelmed by the amount of figs that your tree is producing, my sister has a crazy fig tree and she's just like, please take them. If you get the fig before they've turned to mush and they're overripe, but they're soft and they're delicious, you can actually slice them and IQF those figs.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you're just overwhelmed with what you've got and you can't get to it, IQFing or individually quick freezing figs is a fantastic. Yeah. Figs make a fantastic jam, or even on the savory side, you could make a mostarda. Figs and raspberries together, if you saved any raspberries from earlier in the season, fig and raspberry jam is delicious.
And of course, fig and port.
We're going to be doing a fig and raspberry sorbet pretty soon here.
And as you know, a huge popular treat at the Dahlia Bakery is those fig bars because they are just jam-packed with delicious figs.
Yes.
Can you make fig bars out of fresh figs? I know you can, but
you can. You need to cook them down quite a bit and get all of that moisture out of there. We actually use a dried fig, but it is possible.
Yeah, and figs, I mean, the green fig is definitely a much longer process. Black fig, the mission figs are definitely much easier to make bars like that. It's much easier because it's a higher sugar content, much more concentrated, so it gets there much faster. Yeah.
What Both about things delicious. Like this time of year, thinking about Thanksgiving and fruit cakes? And
smart.
What about things like green stalks that are now ripe? And for some reason, I'm thinking in my head like wild lovage or other things that you can forage that aren't fruit out of the forest right now.
Confit. You can confit the lovage stalks and use that on top of cakes, like dry fruit cake.
Smart.
It was in the old days, it was a very common way to use celery stalk. They would confit them and they would use them as a garnish, you know, those green balls on top of your fruit cake. That's what they would use.
Any leaves or nuts? I mean, of course, there's wild acorns, right? The wild filberts. And
We're getting a lot of the herbs right now, like lemon verbena and things like that, that you can then just immediately make a syrup out of. Or what I've done is make sugar, where you just dry your whatever leaf you were, you know, whether it's sorrel, lovage, lemon verbena, dry it. It only takes like 2 days, depending on the conditions in your home. Just hang it. And it'll dry, and then just put it in the food processor with some sugar and pulse it up, and you've got this lovely scented sugar to use from there.
And you can also bury it in sugar.
Yeah.
And then
yeah.
for about a week, you leave it buried in sugar, lots of it.
Yeah.
And then you just cook that as a syrup, and then you get the same effect. Yeah.
Yeah. yeah. It's a great time of year to get the last of summer's bounty. Yeah.
Well, well, well. It's also, I mean, I know we have to finish up, but there's also, you know, when you're thinking about that combination of fruit, it is definitely pear and apple season.
I know.
Next week, we're going to talk apples.
Yes.
Look at you. So excited.
It's my favorite time of year. You've got peaches, you have apples, you've got just everything.
It's all peaches happening. Are pretty much done. Come on.
Ooh,
now.
I don't know. We're still getting some really nice ones.
How about the fall raspberry crop coming up? I love those fall raspberries. All right. That's next week, though, on Cairo Radio. We're going to go into Food for Thought Tasty Trivia, and we're going to... I'm going to win.
Me.
On Cairo Radio, 97.3 FM. All right, we are back in the Seattle kitchen. It's time for Food for Thought Tasty Trivia. Don't forget, we have a show every week on Cairo Radio. I actually listened to it 3 times this last week, parts of the 3 different shows. The Saturday 4 to 6, the Sunday morning 10 to 12, and it came on again at 5 o'clock on Sunday night.
Can't get enough of us,
can you?
I know. The first time wasn't good enough for Tom. He's got to listen to it 3 more times.
Well, I got 3 different parts of the show.
Oh, Well, that's fun.
Did you learn anything new? I learned that we tend to have a little too many inside jokes on this show.
That's going to be hard.
It's hard as a listener to hear an inside joke, right? So
it's also hard to not have them after 6 years of being together.
15,
15 for the two of you, 6 for me.
All right, that's good.
All right, so I am going to be your opponent today because we do not have a guest. So Tina, our producer, will be administering the quiz. Tina, take it over.
All right, you three. Here's the way this game is played. Each of you get 5 questions. Whoever gets the most correct is the winner. Whoever gets the least amount of answers correct is the big fat loser, and that loser has to give something precious away to a fan of our radio program.
Precious.
Today you'll be playing for Catherine Bedford Bonney, who went over to our Facebook page, Seattle Kitchen, where there was a hot debate about whether or not to put an egg on top of a burger. Tom says it doesn't add anything. Terry disagrees. Catherine says, yuck. And we liked that.
A woman of many words.
Concise.
Decisive.
All right, so I'm going to give away to Catherine. I have a couple of restaurants that serve breakfast because that's where I think eggs generally belong, unless they're like the Lyonnaise salad or unless they're like on the bibimbap or something where they make sense. They're an integral part of the dish, not just a silly add-on because you want to gild the lily. So I'm going to give her breakfast at Seatown. It's our little diner, the market diner in the Pike Place Market. Love and she will get eggs with properly browned hash browns and as eggs as they should be.
That's right. That's
not
a
on
nice
burgers.
Spot.
I know what
apparently.
I'm going to give her.
An egg
I'm
on the
give
burger?
Her 2 scrambled egg and caviar at Lule with 2 glasses of champagne.
Ooh, nice.
See, now that's how an egg should be served.
She's going to change her mind about eggs.
Delightful.
No. She didn't say she didn't like eggs.
No, I know.
That is a perfect egg dish right there, I'd say. I've got no eggs to give, but how about a $75 gift pack from Molly Moon's. A little gift card, maybe some sprinkles and hot fudge.
You got it.
All right.
All right. Those are pretty awesome prizes. Who would like to go first today?
Alistair.
All right. Chef Terry.
Yep.
Which seafood is also known as slime head? Eel, orange roughy, or striped bass?
I'm going to go with the eel.
The answer is orange roughy.
Okay.
I've never even heard of orange roughy.
Orange roughy is from New Zealand.
Oh, thank you.
Uh-huh. You get a point for that.
Oh, good.
Chef, this one's true or false. Monosodium glutamate occurs naturally in seaweed. Does MSG occur naturally in seaweed? Is that true or false?
I'm going to go with yes.
That's correct.
MSG is in everything. Tomatoes, mushrooms.
No, I know, but because she's asking, I'm kind of like, is that a trick question? This is the kind of game we
because
play.
Because I'm asking?
We don't even look for the answer. We just go,
you,
is
it Tina?
Tricky. All right, Chef. Where did pound cake get its name?
From 1 pound, 1 pound, 1 pound, 1 pound.
Correct. The ingredients. Good job.
This should
All
be
right,
a 4
chef,
pound cake.
That's 2 out of 3 correct. Question number 4 for you. What plant is fermented and distilled to make tequila?
Agave.
Correct. That is 3 out of 4 correct. Your last question. 3/4 of the world's tea is which variety? Green, black, or oolong?
Black.
Nice job. That's 4 out of 5.
Wow. Terry.
Nice showing, Chef Terry.
Burn it.
Makes me nervous.
4 is the number to beat.
Okay.
Your first question.
Orange roughy.
Orange roughy. New Zealand.
Yes, that's 2 points. What dessert and baked good topping gets its name from the German word meaning to sprinkle or to stew?
Streusel.
Correct. Good job. What color is tamale? This is a lobster liver. Tamale.
Oh, is it?
What color is it?
Is it green?
Sure is.
Green? Yes.
Hey, you
it's
guys.
Green. It's green when it's raw, and
then
it's red when it's cooked.
I was going to say it turns a color, though.
You are correct.
I was
going to
say orange,
green.
But yes. Okay.
Good job. 2 for 2. What percent of adults in the United States have food allergies? 2, 10, or 20%?
I'm going to go with the high number, 20.
Answer's 2.
2!
Wow.
That makes you a weirdo because you have an allergy to stone fruit, right?
I do have an allergy to stone fruit, except when it's cooked, it's fine.
All right, Katie, question number 4 for you. How much sweetener than sugar is the artificial sweetener Splenda? 60, 300, or 600 times?
I'm going to go 300.
The answer is 600 times.
Okay.
Wowie.
That's outrageous.
Sweet Splenda.
Katie, your last question. What is the name of the Spanish almonds that are rounder, softer, and sweeter than typical almonds?
Marcona almonds.
Yes,
they are delicious.
Tasty.
Yeah.
More correct than incorrect, Katie. That's three out of five.
I'll take it.
Nicely done.
I'll take it.
Very nice, John.
All right.
Sort of, except for those two that I totally did not know the answer to.
All right, Tom.
Tom, your first question is true or false. Along with pigs, rabbits are also considered non-kosher animals. Is that true or false?
False.
The answer is true. All right, Tom, your question number two. What is the name of the substance present in some fruits and vegetables that is sometimes added to jams and jellies as a thickening agent?
Pectin.
Pectin is the answer. Question number three. Half and half is an equal mixture of which two ingredients?
Milk and cream.
Yep. Which type of milk has the most protein, cow, goat, or sheep?
Sheep.
So confident.
That's three out
I'm
of four.
I'm just listening to the audience. I don't need...
I know. The
need.
Audience is like, somebody back there is yelling a
used
little
used to
bit
be I had now. To give a $25 gift card to the gift shop here to get some free answers. These guys are just no, offering give, it up just, for free.
Just giving it away.
Just giving
See
it away.
What if you guys become quiet, you get $25.
I don't even have to cheat real. For reals.
Okay, you have to get this one correct in order to tie with Chef Terry.
Uh-huh.
True or false, Bombay duck is actually dried salted chicken.
You know, all that Bombay duck you've been enjoying lately.
This is a great question. Bombay duck is actually
I'm going to say true. That seems so weird.
It's actually a dried salted fish. That is not correct.
Trick you question.
Tied, that's you a tied with one. Katie. Chef Terry
Ooh,
is the winner.
Really
you tied
with Katie.
Yeah, that's bad.
Yeah, it's a tough day.
You didn't know Bombay duck. I didn't know how sweet
so
it was.
So wait, mm-hmm. are you saying day. Bombay duck is a fish?
Yeah.
That's what she just said.
It's a fish dish.
Mm-hmm. All right, you two. For the tiebreaker, what liqueur is distilled from wormwood and has a characteristic green color and a distinctive licorice flavor?
Oh, up. Yes, yes, Douglas.
Chef Tom Douglas.
Chef Tom.
Not a clue.
Chartreuse.
I think that means he loses.
A liqueur from wormwood.
I know it. Why am I forgetting it?
You do know it.
He chopped his ear off.
Yep.
To lose
yes.
Lautrec.
Yep.
Oh,
yep. That's it.
It is.
You got it.
It's not chartreuse. It's not chartreuse.
No, I said it.
Makes you kind of crazy.
Know,
makes you loopy.
Absinthe.
Yes.
Ooh, you
it
lose.
It is absinthe.
Do I lose? Didn't you just like smack your hand down and then not answer?
I didn't get all these hints beforehand.
That's true.
All right. So Catherine gets. What?
Am I the loser? Am I officially the loser?
You know, I think you're always a winner in my eyes, Katie,
okay.
But yes.
Catherine
All right,
gets...
I'll give her breakfast at Seatown, and if you want to give her an ice cream cone, you can
do
that.
I'll send her a little gift card.
The winner right, here is Catherine.
Breakfast, yeah, exactly. Just for the word yuck. breakfast at Seatown, $50 gift card, and some ice cream cones from Molly Moons.
That's right.
Thank you so much for joining our Facebook page. All right, if you want to be part of our show like Catherine, you can send us a note on Facebook or Twitter at Seattle Kitchen. You're listening to us on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. This show is produced by Tina Knoll at Large Media. Our associate producer is Sarah Leibovitz. And our second and not last sound engineer is Sean Don't Call Me Del Torre. If you'd like to be part of our studio audience, go to hotstovesociety.com and buy tickets for only $15. Comes with breakfast. And remember, if you missed any episode of Seattle Kitchen, you can subscribe to our podcast through Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or download the Cairo Radio app and search for Seattle Kitchen.
Thanks for listening.
Have a great weekend.